Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast. In this episode, we talk about the death of Fry's as the end of an era and the rise of impulse online shopping. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia, and with me today, I have Darren McKay.
Dennis, last week I had to make a trip to the local Best Buy to buy a Xbox controller for my son because he had broken one and was hot to get one and didn't have time for me to order one online.
You don't have an Xbox at home?
I don't have an Xbox, which might shock some people out there, but I do use Xbox controllers on the PC and my son is a big fan. Don't ask me why. But anyway, he'd broken it and to get one online is, you know, a week or so. So I thought I'd see if I could find one locally. And I stopped to think, well, where can I get one locally? And I realized that really the only option in this area is Best Buy.
Well, yeah, you have Best Buy. Sometimes you can find them at Target, but not really anymore. You used to be able to find them at Walmart, but not anymore.
Yeah. Anyway, there wasn't much of an option. I felt like, well, it's strange that I would consider that even a long shot. But we went, and we didn't find one, which made it even worse. And you know, ultimately, we pointed them in a different direction, so crisis averted. When I was in Best Buy, I couldn't help but notice that not only did they not have Xbox controllers in stock, but they didn't have a lot in stock in general, aside from maybe appliances and speakers.
I was in there probably about a month ago from the time that this podcast was being recorded. I can echo what Darren is saying because I go there to buy movies because they used to have a big Blu-ray section. You know, a lot of 4K Blu-rays, the latest releases, well, movies haven't really been released, and they had the big wall of TVs and the stereo room and stuff like that. I went in there, they had maybe three shelves of miscellaneous movies all congealed together, and the majority of the people that were there were at the cell phone booth.
Yeah, cell phones and laptops seemed to be where all the traffic was when I was in there too. Yep. And I couldn't help but remember, about a year ago maybe, not quite. I was over in Oregon, and I happened to try to drop by Fry's Electronics.
Yeah, Fry's is a great place.
Yeah, you know, when I travel, I always try to hit the Fry's or the Micro Center because they're kind of the mecca for cool geek products, you know, a step above the Best Buy. And we went in there, and it was also kind of in the same state, although maybe a little more extreme state. Lots of empty shelves, and products moved towards the front of the store, so there was like a whole back section of the store that was sort of like the Mad Max of retail.
And Fry's, that's pretty common for Fry's lately, because we went to the one in Las Vegas.
Yes.
That was my second time being in there. The first time was, it seemed like an actual store. You walk around there, everything was filled. You could go and get some crazy anime movies that nobody could buy anywhere, which was awesome.
And at great prices.
And they had processors in stock and motherboards in stock. I bought a couple of electronics kits because I like put those things together in my spare time.
Right.
Well, when we went in this last time, this was probably a couple of years ago, none of that stuff was really there. The shelves were getting bare to the point where they didn't even stock like mouse pads. It was really dwindling to the point where it's like, well, are people not buying this stuff or are they just really not stocking it?
Well, I think that's a good point because if you're listening to this and you're not already aware, Fry's closed all of their retail store locations really suddenly in February of last year. In fact, it was so sudden that, I mean, there were rumors that the employees didn't even know they were closing, which I don't know how true that is because it seemed sort of obvious it was coming.
Well, maybe it is not as obvious as you think because it's been like that for a long time. I visited a couple of them in California, and there were certain shelves that were completely empty and others that were just packed with garbage or what seemed like garbage. Like they had way too much wire and it was all just piled up. But then you get down the aisle that has the spray cans, you know, the little air cans that we clean our computers out with or clean our computers out with. They didn't have any of that stuff. So I'm like, why do we have all of this and not this stuff?
Well, as a habit, I try to drop in there when I'm over in that part of the world, which happens at least once, twice a year, if nothing else, to pick up some energy drinks that aren't available in our small community.
Oh, yeah. You can get the balls in the impulse aisle.
Sugar-free balls. Yes. Oh. Someday they'll bring it back to Idaho. But I digress. It was really disappointing because we rolled in, the sign was up, and I just was shocked because it feels like the end of an era. It's not the first one. I mean, in Idaho, we used to have, you know, a fairly good size selection. We had Circuit City. We had Ultimate Electronics.
Oh, that was a fun store.
you know, we've had some local companies that have kind of come and gone, but...
Oh, we had CompUSA.
Oh, that's right. Even CompUSA. And of course...
CompUSA was the biggest one.
Everybody had Blockbuster.
Blockbuster, Suncoast.
Oh, Suncoast.
Oh, we're reminiscing.
I know. It's so sad.
Suncoast was awesome.
Do you remember when we used to buy stuff? I think is what I'm getting at here. And
remember when you used to go out to the store and you could actually buy something from Radio Shack and be able to use it?
And touch it.
And touch it.
And hold it. And there was competition.
Instant gratification.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. As a child, my children will never experience the picking up boxes and trying to figure out if a game is good based on the cover art and the description on the back.
Oh no. They're going to go to some Twitch streamer who will get the game pre-release and then be able to talk it up.
make it sound good even if it's not.
Yeah.
Because they're paid to.
Yeah.
And my children will be able to purchase this game online sight unseen and never play it because they can watch someone beat it in a playthrough video.
Well, and there's no... Well, you buy it online, you don't have that tangible thing sitting next to you saying, you should play this game because you just spent $50 on it.
But it's not even that. It's that they don't have that experience. Mm-hmm. They don't shop like we do, Dennis. And I think that's why these retail stores are dying. And it's been coming for a long time.
Yeah.
At first, I would have blamed Amazon and to some extent eBay because it seems so obvious. I mean, it took a while to get Amazon rolling and eBay rolling to the point where, I don't know, maybe we didn't trust them initially mm-hmm. because we were brick and mortar shoppers.
Well, let's go down that path with online shopping. So we have eBay. It started as an auction site to sell collectibles. So a way to get rid of your old crap.
Right.
And it's manifested into a complete storefront where people will sell new stuff through their eBay store.
And yeah, absolutely. I mean, I get eBay coupons in my inbox now, which seems ludicrous. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's the new normal. I don't know. I'm just chasing kids off my lawn with a golf club, right?
Yeah. Well, and the nice thing about eBay is the fact that it is a global thing. You can buy something from the Russian Federation or something from Great Britain or Japan. It just depends on what it is you're looking for and if that person happens to have it for sale. It's kind of like the expanded classified ads.
And if you're listening to this, it's not even an American phenomenon, Dennis. This is global. We have
global.
We have sites like AliExpress, which is, I think, out of China. And we have, is it Rakuten out of Japan?
Yeah.
Rakuten maybe is right. That are huge sites that are growing in other parts of the world. And I'm sure there's an Arabic version and maybe a European version. So it's not just in the United States where we're seeing retail fall to these online websites.
So what is the draw to online shopping? For me, I see it as cost. Online retailers can operate at a lower margin because they don't have to pay for brick and mortar stores. They don't have to pay for copious amounts of employees to go and greet you at the door and harass you into buying this instead of that and right. getting a crazy warranty. Instead, they can just have a big list of this is what we have to sell. There's the specs. Here's the price. You put shipping on top of that and if you are close to the distribution center, it doesn't cost you very much. You can get it quick. And it's almost like going to the store.
Yeah. And I can see your point with the cost thing, but I would argue that maybe cost is not even the primary driver, Dennis. Mm-hmm. I think it's about convenience.
Convenience. More convenient than, say, the instant gratification of going and getting it right now?
Yeah. Well, let me make a case here. So I want to buy a laptop, for example. Mm-hmm. Well, they got them at Best Buy.
Yeah.
And maybe even a good selection for a local shop, right? Mm-hmm. But if I'm going to shop online, I have the convenience of looking not just at what's at Best Buy, but I can look at what's at eBay, what's at Amazon, what's on Dell's site, what's on everybody's site. Not only can I compare those devices directly, indirectly, but I can read customer reviews. I can go out and instantly compare it to an expert who can recommend this one over that one because it's got this much memory or this faster hard drive. And I don't have to listen to that Best Buy employee sell me that cable or that extended warranty or fake some stats that may or may not be accurate based on how well trained this fella is.
And I think you're onto something there because you can go to HP, B&H Photo, any of those places, and you can buy multiple versions of that same product that Best Buy might only have one version of.
Exactly. And Best Buy can get these things probably, maybe, some of them, but you have to wait. And they're getting better about it. I'm aware that you can get products from Best Buy a lot faster now because they, like everyone else have learned, they've got to compete with the Amazons and the same day, next day delivery folks. and free shipping to store. I mean, even Walmart has that now, right?
Yep.
So the world is shifting now to this, well, maybe instant gratification result, but I think the upfront convenience trumps price. I will pay a little bit more, Dennis, if an expert recommends it and it has 10 million five-star reviews and it's on sale for 20% off with free shipping, right?
Go to hardwaresilent.com to check on the latest motherboard reviews.
Heck yes, and click through, please, so we get an affiliate link, right? Which is the other thing, too. Mm-hmm. It's the world that we live in today. I think that my desire to touch and have somebody tell me their product is great, whether I trust them or not, is easily trumped by being able to sit there over maybe a nice glass of whiskey or a soda, watching the video on TV and looking for the best deal, talking to the experts indirectly by reading their articles, and walking out the door with what I am pretty confident is the best product without having to even leave my house.
Oh, really? And here you just went to Best Buy to go get a game controller.
So let's talk about that for a minute. The reason these places survive is sad in a way, right? Because there are really only a couple great reasons to buy stuff locally. One is because you can't get it delivered to you.
Well, that's one, yeah.
Two is because you need it right now and you can't get it right now because you're buying it online. And in some cases, you have to have it shipped even from a foreign company, like you mentioned, right?
Yep.
And third, maybe you need an expert to come install it.
Oh.
Maybe.
Is there really people out there that need experts to install stuff? I mean, everybody's supposed to know how to install a TV.
You'd think.
How to program a VCR, God.
Geek Squad, Dennis.
Oh my God, Geek Squad.
Geek Squad, right? And they're not the only one. I mean, there's a, what is there, Geek on a Scooter and all these other different variations of it. And I'm sure there are 100 local college students that are advertising their ability to teach your grandma how to change the channel. Mm. And I don't take that lightly because we talk about the target demographic isn't you or I here.
No, it's not.
No, and it probably won't be our kids because they'll grow up with that stuff.
Now, for me, the reason for me to go to the brick and mortar store lately is just to buy movies because I am a media person. I would like to have my movies on disc. And there's a reason for that. One, you get better audio quality.
Yes.
Two, you can pause it indefinitely if you want.
Woo, but you can do that with streaming.
You can to a certain degree. You have to go and log into your streaming thing. You have to go find your account. You have to go find the movie that you were watching. And then you have to go and hit play. And if you have the media, you have it. You own it forever. What happens if the internet goes out? Oh. Power goes out.
Yeah, bad connection. Someone else is using your Netflix account. That never happens, by the way.
No, never. But but for me, I like to have the physical media because I can go and browse it. If I want to go and watch a movie, we have them all sorted by genre and then by alphabetical. So I can go through and say, hey, I want to go watch Need for Speed. I can go and grab it from the list, pull it out of the rack, put it in the Blu-ray player, and actually play.
Well, there is also one other argument that I have to concede for owning the media, and that is the George Lucas aspect.
Well, yeah.
Right?
I do have 4 copies of Star Wars.
Well, and not only that, but that is that over time, these videos get changed, restored, technicolored for the old folks, right? Mm-hmm. They get converted to different formats. Extras get added or dropped, right? So the different variations, if you own the copy that is definitive, you own the copy that's definitive. And I can also point out that recently I found as I'm trying to introduce classic movies to my children that they don't always exist on streaming.
Or if they do, they charge you $10 a viewing. You have to rent it, kind of like going down to Blockbuster. But now you just have to click through and say, I want to buy this for a day.
Oh, hold on. This reminds me of another model, Valve software.
Oh my gosh, Valve. We can talk about Valve.
We maybe should, because what you're describing to me is the same reason that everybody said that online things like Steam were not going to survive, right? And maybe it's an interesting parallel to make, because we all wanted to buy our own games and our own media and hold them in our hot hands and be able to resell them when we were done. And where has that industry gone?
That went the way of GameStop. You buy it for $50, we'll give you 20 cents.
And we'll resell it for $49.50.
And say it's like new because there is only one scratch on the front.
But they might throw in a sticker or something. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, you were talking about Valve, though. And if I remember correctly, some long time ago, when Valve was created, it was not necessarily a media distribution network, but it was a way for game developers and game publishers to sell their game without the worry of piracy. because we had elaborate keys that were inside manuals.
Oh my gosh.
And we had the thing where you had to put the disc into the drive to actually play the game. And people would go online to download the CD crack, so they didn't have to have that, mostly as a convenience, and not that they weren't buying the game. Well, some people weren't, but allowing you to play it without having to pull out the media, you could have it in your little CD rack and put it in the closet.
Well, they sold it with other benefits too. The one that finally convinced me originally to convert over, because I always knew my games would be current. And when you were to do online play back in the day, every LAN party, there was half a day of trying to get everybody on the same version so we could all play together.
Yeah, that's true. Because you had to go and, well, like COD, for instance, Call of Duty 4. There was three patches that were released. Well, not counting the original game. If you wanted to play online, you had to have the first patch downloaded. But if you were on a server that had the anti-cheat, you had to have patch 2. And it was a matter of, they kept releasing these things to handle issues that were happening while the game was being released.
Well, and that model's only gotten worse now because software is so on demand. They patch these things sometimes 2-3 times in a week, especially when a game is new. I'm looking at you, Cyberpunk. But it's very true. You just expect now when you buy a new game that when you first install it, you've got to patch it and update it, and there are going to be 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 in the life of that thing at least.
Oh, there was, what was it? Grand Theft Auto 5. We talked about this on the podcast. I went to the store to buy a copy of it because I heard that if you got the physical copy, it came with the benchmark on the disc. If you bought it online, you might not get the benchmark. So I went to the store, I bought the game, I installed the game, and then I had to promptly download a patch that was the same size as the game that I just installed so that I could play it.
And how long did that take?
That took 3 hours. It was 5 gigs.
Wow. Okay, yeah, and that's pretty normal now. Fortunately, the bandwidth is finally catching up with the size of some of these patches.
Yeah. Well, and on top of that, I still wasn't able to benchmark with Grand Theft Auto 5, and I have 3 copies of the game.
Oh.
One on the Xbox, 2 on the PC.
But do you play?
No.
Oh, no.
Actually, the PC version of it, they had the Lucas effect, where they added that first-person view into the game, but then they didn't improve the controls. So the controls were still based off of a controller movement, really jerky and not very accurate. It made it impossible to drive a car in first-person mode. You still had to be in third-person mode.
Well, look at the plus side. You can go to Best Buy to buy a controller. Maybe.
So we've been talking about basically a change in the era. So when we were building computers, you know, again, we're kind of putting ourselves back in the history days, we would go down to CompUSA. CompUSA had an amazing computer components section.
Yes.
Where you could go buy LED fans. Did you know you have LED fans before RGB fans?
I know, that's crazy. And cold cathode fans too.
Oh yes, those were awesome. You get fan filters. You could buy power supplies. You could buy motherboards. They were behind the counter. You could buy cases. They had cases on the wall. And the prices were actually relatively good. But what was the alternative? Well, we could go to Circuit City. We could go to maybe Ultim Electronics.
Yeah, and if you live in a bigger city, yeah, Micro Center and Fry's came along, but, and I'm sure others.
But there was no way to buy that online, so to speak. I mean, they did have, what was it? Price Watch was one of the sites I would go to all the time.
And then Newegg came along, but that's about the same time as Amazon.
Right. And we had, what was it? It was Egghead.
Ah, that's right.
They had an online store and they had a retail store. But the online shopping back then was not very robust. So the only way you could buy this anything was to go to the brick and mortar store. And a lot of times they had everything in stock. You didn't necessarily buy it online.
Oh, I do remember the days you could build a whole PC out of a store in town.
Oh, yeah. That was kind of fun, actually. I remember going to, well, and this was an online store. It was called Cooler Guys. And I kind of compared them to CompUSA in terms of what it was that they sold. But it was a very small niche store. It seemed like a family-owned sort of store where they just had cooler stuff. So they had fans, heat sinks, filters, some case stuff, a few lights here and there. And that was it. So we had these specialized stores. And of course, now everything is on Amazon stores where you have manufacturers selling everything. So you can go to the Thermaltake store, for instance, and buy everything that Thermaltake sells. Instead of Thermaltake having to deal with going to Best Buy or going to Newegg, they can deal with their distribution themselves through this online shopping portal. So it's really just changed how we consume and how we buy things. And I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. It's just disappointing that we can't go and touch and look at stuff anymore.
This is very true. And you lose some of that protection and the instantaneous gratification too. I mean, one of the great reasons to buy stuff locally is you could go down, you could pick it up, you could take it home. If you were wrong,
you could take it back.
You'd take it back immediately and get the replacement product without the hassle of RMAs and cross shipping and all that sort of stuff. I can still remember, Dennis, when I used to have to give a credit card number to somebody so they would cross ship in an effort to try not to be down for weeks at a time PC was broken.
Well, there was CompUSA used to have this buyer protection program where you would buy the product and then you buy the protection program. And then it was basically during the warranty period, if it died, you could bring it back and they would replace it for free.
Isn't that kind of the same as the extended warranty stuff that
Best Buy does?
Yeah.
It's very similar. The thing was, if a new product had come out and they didn't have your product in stock, they would automatically give you the new product.
Oh, now I'm remembering. Yeah, because there were some opportunities, shall we say, to upgrade.
Yeah. And this is how, I think I told this story once before, but I had an amazing GeForce 2 Ultra from Hercules. It was one of the Prophet 2 Ultra cards. Awesome card. Right. Super overclocked. I paid like almost $600 for this thing, which seems cheap given the current 30 RX prices and whatnot. But
those days are gone.
Neither here nor there. Well, per the request of one of my friends at the time, said, I should go and buy the extended warranty because when the GeForce 3 comes out, you can take your card back and get the GeForce 3. I'm like, well, okay, sure. I'm going to try it. It was an extra like $20 or whatever. Sure enough, GeForce 2 Ultra, I had in my machine working perfectly. GeForce 3 comes out. My friend calls up and says, hey, you should go swap your card. I just got this one from CompUSA. And I'm like, all right. So I took my card out, took it down. And before I went to the counter to go trade it in, I was looking around to see what was available.
Okay. Sure.
No GeForce 2 Ultras. So I took it up to the counter and said, this thing broke. I wanted to go and do the exchange. And it's like, okay. The guy I was talking to handed it off to another kid behind him who started to peel the card apart.
Oh, what?
Taking off all the heat sinks and stuff and looked at me and said, this is broken, right? And it's like, it is now. And at that point, I was committed. So they replaced it with a Hercules GeForce 3 card.
No extra charge. Wow.
No extra charge. This is the part that really pissed me off. The drivers for the GeForce 3 were crap during the first month of release.
Oh no, so, not as good as it sounded.
So nothing was stable. And on top of that, remember how much I paid for that GeForce 2 Ultra card?
Yeah.
The GeForce 3 was $300.
Wow.
So I upgraded to a worse card, notably just a little bit better. It supported like DirectX 9C or something stupid like that. But and then I got a worse card out of it. And 2 months later, the fan died.
Oh, wow. See, if you only knew what you knew now, right?
Yeah, I know. That was one of the opportunities for upgrades. You could go and buy something, put the warranty on it, wait a couple of months, take it back. I want that because they don't have this exact one in stock anymore, and then just swap it. And maybe that could have been part of the downfall of CompUSA.
Yeah, one of the many ways that these folks could lose money. And that's it's a dying breed, retail in general, I think, mostly because of those things that we've already talked about, the convenience, the cost. But I think we'd be digress if we didn't at least mention in passing that technology also, particularly the smartphone, has helped put a nail in that coffin as well.
That is true. So if we remember back to Radio Shack, for instance.
Sure.
What was the one thing that Radio Shack excelled at selling? Personal electronics.
Right.
So we had telephones. We had clocks. We had calculators. They sold a ton of calculators. CB radios. I bought a CB radio from there once. Electronic component parts. You could buy resistors and LED lights and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. It used to be where we went for wiring.
Wiring for the cars and stuff.
Right.
We could just buy the speaker wire and, well, you could buy car speakers from there and home speakers from there. Most of that stuff that you could buy there, you could put on your smartphone now. Like it comes with a calculator. Yeah. It comes with a video recorder. It comes with a sound recorder. It comes with an answering machine. It, basically everything that you could have bought at one of those stores is in your pocket now.
Yeah, the sad fall of Radio Shack. I mean, from greatness to selling only every remote-controlled piece of garbage known to man.
Oh, yeah, you could buy the remote-controlled trucks and stuff from there, and some of them were actually pretty good.
Yeah, and they had a great selection, but they couldn't survive the transition.
No. And unfortunately, with the situation that happened this last year where everything was locked down, shipments weren't going out. We talked about how the ships that had sailed from China bringing us our goods, that was going to be the last shipment we'll see for about 6 months. So there was a shortage of everything all over the place, including RTX cards.
Yeah, well, and that's touched all kinds of things that would normally be carried by big box stores, which maybe means I should be a little more forgiving of Best Buy, because you can't buy, you know, freezers and appliances without 6 months waits. Furniture is in the same boat. I mean, you go to a lot of these places and you can't buy anything. We were in an IKEA not even a month ago, and every display model was there, but if you went to get the little card, it said, you know, out of stock with no restock date.
Yeah, because they don't know when it's going to actually show up. Well, with people not going out to stores to buy stuff, we don't necessarily need the stores there, but we still need a retail outlet to buy certain items. So where do we buy our refrigerators? Well, we could buy them from Amazon, but I don't know if I would really trust myself to pick up a refrigerator from Amazon.
Right.
One, because it may show up damaged. You know, the guy that's delivering it may not be able to, you know, get it in the truck accurately, or, you know, it might have to come freight, which will cost more money. But then when you get it and it doesn't have the right drawer space, then you have to pack it up and go through the hassle of sending it back.
Yeah, that is one huge advantage of buying locally from your Best Buys or Home Depots or Walmarts or whatever. And I think that's going to allow some of them to survive, which is nice. But it's definitely going to be a lot smaller number of retailers than you and I are used to.
Well, and I think what will happen is, like Best Buy, for instance, will probably still sell the items that people come in to buy. So they'll probably still have televisions. They'll still have mobile phones. They'll have the home appliances. They probably are not going to have computer gaming stuff anymore. And I'm not sure if the movie section is going to survive.
Even really, the console market is going the same route. Very few people are buying physical media from them. And those that do are voting with their dollar online as it is. You know, that's why GameStop's in trouble. And all these local used places seem to be fading away or are surviving on retro consoles.
Speaking of local, maybe this is the one last thing that we can touch on here. Around here, there are basically three local computer stores. One of them is called RGM. It's been around forever. And the first time I remember him, it was he had a local BBS. And he would actually sell computer stuff from his BBS, which I thought was actually pretty cool. And then he had a brick and mortar store. I remember buying a monitor, 4 megs of memory, and a CD-ROM drive from the guy. And it was just one of those places where you could go, and he always had everything in stock. And since he did computer repair at the same time, when a computer would get upgraded, he would part the machine out and then put all the pieces on the shelf. So you could go in there and buy used computer stuff.
Very nice.
Well, nowadays you walk into there and his store, nothing's on the shelf anymore. And it's kind of just become a hub for electronics recycling. But instead of him taking the components apart and then reselling them, he just sends them off to the recycler. Which is, it's kind of going against the way that the business was built to begin with. But with people not buying old retro computer stuff anymore, there's really not a market for it. One of the other ones that really comes to mind was SR Systems, and I had to be reminded of that name.
Called Computer Central, if you're local.
But SR Systems, they had an online store similar to, you know, Cooler Guys and Newegg and whatnot, where you could buy component parts. And some of the components were actually in stock in their store, and other ones you would buy it and they would be shipped from a third party to you, depending on what they had and what they had listed and what kind of agreements they had. Well, I remember one time going to the website, seeing that they had a hard drive that I wanted. It was actually the spec that I wanted, the size I wanted, and a decent price. Well, they were local. So I drove down to the store.
Ah, the instant gratification.
and a local store.
And walked in, and they had a small little showroom with just some computer cases, a couple of computer mods. I walk up to the counter and say, I would like to buy this. I gave them the exact model, the exact item number, everything. The one guy is looking it up and say, I don't know if we have one of those. He goes and looks at his computer again, and then he takes off. And then another guy comes out and says, you know, let me check the website. Yeah, we got like 300 people viewing our website right now. Kind of as a sly, is like, why the heck are you here instead of ordering something from the store that's online? And I'm like, wow, what a jerk. And unfortunately, that was the last thing I ever bought from them.
Yeah, and I have to say today, they are mostly, I think, surviving on doing repairs and upgrades for folks that are not technical enough to do it themselves. Yeah.
And the computer repair and service market is huge. As we mentioned before, there's every high school kid around wants to actually fix your computer because they know how to do it and they have the time to.
Well, yeah. And you mentioned a couple of retailers. I think the last one that I can think of is the Meridian Computers, which is very local here. And if I'm not mistaken, they survive also on the repair model, but they also have converted themselves into a pretty good training facility as well.
Oh, yeah. So training's important.
So training will survive because people are always going to need the knowledge and the certifications and all that sort of thing for their jobs. One other way they'll survive, but as a brick and mortar, I don't know that they sell much at all.
No, and that's one of the things I've run into with my retro kick that we talked about in a previous episode. I used to be able to go to just a thrift store and buy an old computer. We also talked about how, you know, when you just recently upgrade, the components that you're trying to unload, you can't pay anyone to take.
For sure.
Well, now the model is to send it to the recycler. So nothing goes into the secondhand market anymore. So that's why prices for a case has gone to like $500 for something that's just 20 years old. It's still junk, but in the right hands, in the right mindset, for the right collector, it's worth it.
Well, and maybe that's a good place to wind up today, because as we've talked a lot about the next generation and their changes in shopping and changes in knowledge, that's, I think, maybe the last thing that may be coming true, is that these people no longer see value in any physical or older material. So there's no retro market needed for them. They don't ever look back, Dennis. They only look forward to the next iPhone, the next video game, the next YouTuber, and everything else no longer has any value.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes at hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS. Follow us on Twitter or like us on Facebook. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2021. Thanks for listening.